We mentioned there's another Steph. I mean, there's a few things, but there's another comment in particular we wanted to let you hear. So he says on ESPN, right there courtside, hey, shut up, Twitter. Let us figure this out. And then after the game, on local post game, he had this to say, addressing anyone who was thinking white flag with regard to recent comments.
Anybody who thinks that I'm okay with just being an average basketball, on an average basketball team, is insane. Take whatever I said, I still stand on it, but that doesn't mean that you're not in a situation where you're trying to get better, make appropriate moves that help you do that. Mike knows that. We've talked about it. That's the expectation for me, trying to help lead the team where we want to go. Again, that doesn't mean that you're reckless. What people's definition of that is where I was talking about the Twitter fingers thing, like trade machines are fun, but what does that actually look like? So we're going to handle our business. Mike's going to handle his, see where we end up.
So here's what I think has happened this week. And a boss of mine talked to me about this years ago and was actually talking about radio. But there is overlap between radio and Golden State Warriors basketball. It is all entertainment content creation. And so here was my thought about what the Warriors have done this week. Because I get it. If it sounds like they're like, we're not making a trade, we don't want to do something stupid. And everyone's like, it's a white flag. And now they're like, no. It's not a white flag. We're all in on right now. It's like, are you guys flip-floppers? What the Warriors are doing, in my mind, is they are managing the balance between hope and fear. And that's what you have to do. You have to manage the balance between hope and fear. And you've seen it literally just in the last 48 hours. You lose to the Raptors, and we all get filled with fear. Then you beat the Timberwolves, and we all get filled with hope. And the Warriors, they need to ride those emotions as well. They're feeling them. They know their fan base. They know their audience, as any good content creator does. They know exactly what everybody's thinking. That's why they take these comments to, whether it's social media or press conferences or whatever. And that's why I'm on team wait and see what February 6th brings. There is so much more hope and fear and information that will come between now and then. And no matter what happens, I will never be in favor of them doing something stupid just because they feel compelled to do something. Because so many people want them to.
They will never feel that, I don't believe. As long as they have, you know, Steph there and Joe Lacob there, they're not going to be a team that does something reckless. And you heard Steph and Steve Kerr both talk about that. So in terms of what they might do in 3 weeks, I do think a lot of it's predicated on the next 10 games. You have 10 more games before February 6th, which is when the deadline is, and you play at LA that night. And you've got 8 home games and 2 road games in the next 10.
That's good.
And if you look at those opponents, you've got Boston and OKC. And other than that, there are winnable games. And as we saw from the last 2 games, a game that's winnable is losable, and a game that's losable is also winnable. So you can't really look at any of the next 10 and think, oh, I got them at 7-3. Well, they could be, but they can also beat Boston, and then they could lose to Washington and turn around and beat Boston, because that's who this team is. So, yeah, the balance between hope and fear, it's real, and it's the same no matter what team you cover. And right now at 20-20, it's a pretty good balance, because you're hopeful that they can still be a playoff team, but you're fearful that your older players might miss more games and Kuminga might not come back, and you're hopeful they can bring somebody in, but you're fearful they might have to trade Kuminga. So there's a ton of hope and fear that have already been there and that also exists over the next couple of weeks.
So what do y'all think of what Steph Curry said? What did last night do for you with regard to your outlook, your hopes, your fears? 888-957-9570. Let's take some calls. Let's go to Irv in Berkeley. Hi, Irv. Thanks for the call.
Hey, how you doing?
What's going on?
What's up, Irv?
Hey, I just have a problem with Kerr and not being able to get or try to trade for a big man. I think it's easier to trade for a big man than it is, like, I keep hearing Jimmy Butler and Cam Johnson. And those guys are not going to help the Warriors. They need a guy like Vucevic, the guy that's in Chicago.
Nikola Vucevic, yes.
Yeah, or the guy that's in Washington.
You're talking about Valanciunas.
Yeah. When they play against big teams that like Looney, he just doesn't have the size. He can do all he wants, but he just doesn't have the size against those big teams.
I'm interested in adding a big guy too, but Irv, you started the conversation by saying you had a problem with Kerr. What does he have to do with acquiring a big guy?
Every big guy that he's had, he's either traded them, cut them, but he doesn't coach them up. And I look at a lot of centers around. We don't need the guy that's in Denver, nor Anthony Davis. We just need somebody that can block shots or change a shot and be a lob threat.
It's interesting. Irv, thanks. Really appreciate it. First of all, Kerr is not in charge of trading and cutting. That he's the head coach. He's not the general manager. I'm not going to say he doesn't have input. But the idea that he's never coached up the bigs, I don't know. If we want to go back for the whole Kerr era, I think they've made wonderful use of their bigs. If we want to go back to Andrew Bogut and then kind of who Kerr referenced when you and I had him on earlier this week talking about even guys like Otto Porter, and maybe that's not who people think of as a big, but he's like a stretch four type of a guy. Listen, I would love for them to acquire the right stretch five if it works, but I don't want them necessarily to have to give up a first round pick to do it. And I don't think it really, I don't think it's a Steve Kerr thing. I think it's an organizational thing.
Well, the idea of coaching him up, like you could look at Andrew Bogut, who came in as the player he already was, and he fit great because he was an elite passer. JaVale McGee, when he came here, JaVale McGee was as good as he's ever been. Same thing with Maurice Spates. Does Steve get credit for coaching them up? James Wiseman came here, and Steve maybe didn't coach him up, but Wiseman has gone on to not do much elsewhere, and now he's hurt with a torn Achilles. His career might be in real jeopardy in the NBA. So the idea of coaching up a big man, it felt like, you know, Bielitsa was a good fit. And then last year, the guy they had didn't really fit. The guy who ended up going to the bench for the remainder of the game.
Saric.
The other big white Euro.
Dario Saric.
I mean, did he not coach up Saric? Was Saric not really that good?
Saric had the same start here as Buddy Hield did.
To a lesser extent, but you're right.
We're digging this dude.
Yeah.
And then it was like, I'm not digging the dude anymore.
And so the idea of coaching up a big, you need to have the right big man in here. And, you know, the one guy I'm really interested in, and we're not going to see him until the Warriors are really out of it, and that's Quentin Post, because you look at the G League, and he's lighting up the G League, and he could be eventually the stretch five that everybody's clamoring for.
Eventually, yes, but I'm certainly not. That's one thing I would reject that we do hear from callers and conversations, which is let's start playing even more young players.
No.
And when I say young players, I'm not talking about Moses Moody. I'm talking about somebody who was just drafted in the second round earlier this year. Like, no. Like we're not turning them over to brand new players who've never played in the NBA. Here's one thing. This might be a small thing, but it does cross my mind. When you look at two teams last night who lead the league in clutch games, and you can think clutch game stat is stupid or whatever, and for those of you who don't know what it is, it means that the game within the final 5 minutes is within 5 points, okay? And the Warriors and Timberwolves play the most of those games more than anybody else in the whole league. On some level, doesn't that say to you that the space between what we're looking at with the Warriors now and being an actual good playoff team is not that large? I'm not talking about championship contention. But if we can all agree that the Warriors are, as Steve Kerr said last night, competitive, and they're right there in almost all of their games, but what that doesn't look like they do very well is have scores at the finish. Well, could there be tweaks, acquisitions, whatever, that change that a little bit and the Warriors go from a 500 team to a 580 team in the second half of the year. Like, they're not far off.
I get what you're saying, but
there's something there.
I get it, but two things. One, I do think that the clutch game stat is kind of a joke because, you know, being within five with 5 minutes left, you can still lose by 16.
Right, but it's a close game. Like, you haven't been blown off the floor.
But the majority of the games the Warriors have played have been that. And the majority of the games in the association, at least half the games, by and large, it's about, I would say, 40% of all games are clutch games. And you look at the Warriors, and they are 20-20, and in clutch games, they're 12-13. So in games that aren't clutch, they're 8-7. That means eight times they've won games that probably were comfortable blowouts, and you could look at their game log, and you can look at a bunch of games that were blowouts. They opened up with a 36-point win over Portland. They beat Utah by 41. They lost to, was it Memphis, by 53?
Yeah, that one was out of hand.
Yeah, by 51. Right. So a lot of the games, you know, that are clutch games, I do think they ultimately become a reflection of who you are in general.
No, they do, but I, like, to me, when you lead the league in that category, and the Warriors have 25 such games, and that does only trail the Wolves at 26. And then you look at the Washington Wizards, who have 11, like not even half as many. And maybe that's too low of a bar to just compare them to the Washington Wizards. But there's something there to say they're right there in almost every basketball game. Because, by the way, in those 25 games, those clutch games that the Warriors have played, they've only won 12 of them, and they've won 20 games. So that means eight times they beat somebody maybe kind of going away.
Right.
And then in the rest of, so that's eight games.
But that's my point about the stat, is that I do think that these records in clutch games are usually reflective of what your overall record is. Minnesota's 12-14 in clutch games, and on the year, they're 21-19. So they're 9-5 in non-clutch games, slightly better in non-clutch, but their record is still somewhat reflective of what they are in clutch games.
No, I don't disagree with you, although, for instance, the Detroit Pistons have the seventh best record, and I know they've gotten a lot better this year, but you're largely right. The top three teams in clutch games are the Cavs, Thunders, and Celtics. They're the best teams in the league. But that point, I think, remains, which is that if there is something, and this is what they were trying to do, I think, by acquiring Schroeder, if there's something that you can do in the final 5 minutes of the game to become a more dynamic team, then you're not that far away from, again, going from a 500 team to, whether that is the 6 seed, the 5 seed, I'm not saying the 1 seed or the 2 seed, but they're not that far off from being the competitive basketball team that we're all hoping they have for us here in the second half of the year.
Yeah, and that's what Steph was saying last night. He said, you know, back off the Twitter fingers and let us figure it out. And he just wants to be relevant and get into a playoff series and be competitive. And yes, they can be that. They can do that. And last night, I do think, was a big step toward that, because for me, there's a gulf, not only from a standings perspective, but also emotionally. There's a big difference between 19-21 and 20-20. The fact that you beat Minnesota to get to 20-20, to get to the 10 spot, to go 2-2 on the trip, it must have given them a big shot of confidence. And I know that fans are certainly feeling a lot different about this team, as opposed to if you laid an egg in Toronto and then you gacked a 24-point lead against Minnesota. If you somehow found a way to lose that one and you dipped a 19-21, we'd be having a whole different conversation today, even though it's only just one game. You
indeed,
know?
Indeed. Here is the conversation we're having. It's centered around these comments from Steph Curry on the floor to ESPN right after the game.
All the Twitter fingers who's got deals that we need to make can kind of just shut up a little bit and let us figure this thing out. Like, we know we can be competitive. We showed, you know, that toughness tonight. Obviously, every team is trying to find ways to get better. And for us, we've been great for a very long time. This is just a unique year where we have to be able to stay relevant and give ourselves a chance and just have some life in a playoff series, and we have a whole lot of confidence that we can, you know, beat anybody. So that's it.
I mean, the two things that stand out to me right there at the end, where he really emphasizes we have a whole lot of confidence that we can beat anybody, but even prior to that, when he's like, shut up and let us figure this out, as opposed to what we do hear from stars, at least behind the scenes in the NBA, which is get me help, or get me out of here. Steph Curry, I hope there's an appreciation in this conversation, and I know that Steph is usually pretty damn appreciated by Warriors fans, but I hope there's an appreciation for what he's saying here, which is that, A, there's a responsibility because I'm a Warrior. I don't want the Warriors to do bad things for the Warriors. But the flip side of that is I'm not sitting here demanding a move. I'm not pouting. I'm not complaining. I want to get in the lab with my guys and see if we can figure this out. That's the stuff that you don't hear from NBA stars very often. So once again, you know, and I said it earlier this week, party of one when it comes to this
guy. Right. And here you are with, 40 down and 42 to go. And yeah, he wants to get in the lab and, quote, figure it out. And he should be given every chance to do that. And if you look at what that means, it means Draymond's back and his flu-like symptoms or whatever kept him out of the game. And the reports yesterday were that he was, you know, ashen and gray and sickly. And so you hope he comes back soon. And, you know, Jonathan Kuminga, when we talked about the injury and a reevaluation in 3 weeks, that should be coming up in the next week. Bob Fitzgerald today at 4:15 maybe can shed more light on what he's hearing about just at least a reevaluation. But if Draymond can get healthy and Kuminga can come back, then you can really start to see what this team that Steph is talking about looks like again.
Let's go to Trevor in Rohnert Park. Hey, Trevor, thanks for calling. What are you doing?
Hey, what's up, guys? How are you?
What's up?
Well, so a little thought about what Curry said last night, and I think what's going on with the organization in general is what team are you going to get? It is very difficult when you're a team that's 20-20 and very average and trying to understand which way you're going to go. So when you look at, are they going to make a move for somebody? Who is that guy? Is it going to be a center? Like Nikola from the Bulls, or is it going to be somebody else? Do they go get a shooter? It's hard to say because you have a guy like Buddy Hield who went off for 18 points last night, but is very up and down. You get the consistency is what I think they're looking for. So I think when you hear Curry say that, I think they're just in a mode of they got players that can go and make a run on the team now if they play to their potential. Are they going to do that? I think that's the magic question of like, who do you move if you're going to move somebody and who is that for? Because any one of these guys, if they just kind of pick it up a little bit, pick up the slack, you got a team, like you said, they're very close. You got a team that can start stringing together wins.
Well, and so, Trevor, thank you so much. I want like to your point, this has gotten lost in what happened last night. There was no Kuminga. No Draymond.
Nope.
There's no Pajemski. And there was no Slo-Mo, who is kind of a gluey rotational guy, at least in some matchups. And they went against one of the biggest, baddest front lines in the entire NBA. Gobert, whatever you think about Julius Randle, he's big body.
Yep.
Naz Reid, I think, is a phenomenal basketball player off the bench for them. They went up against that group down four players. Minnesota was down no one. They were at home and at full strength. So don't forget that acquisition the first week of February. His name is Jonathan Kuminga.
And also think about last night and a big reason why they won. Two of the reasons are two of the most prime trade targets, and that's GP2 and Kevon Looney. Two yep. guys who stepped in and did the little things and played great. And any trade you want to make probably involves one, if not both of them.
That is exactly right. Unless you're talking about something at a higher level, the
right.
Wiggins and Kuminga's type names.